hope is found. He is my light, my strength, my song. This cornerstone, this solid ground.
Hello, this is Anil Kumar from Back to the Bible radio broadcast. On this program of our current series, Journey to the Cross, we will take a closer look at what Jesus did when he cleansed the temple. Let us join Dr. Neufeld in the Gospels on today's message entitled, Monday, the Journey Demands a New Heart. Let us read from the book of Luke, chapter 13, verse 6 to 9. A man had a fig tree planted in his vineyard, and he came seeking fruit on it and found none. And he said to the vine dresser, "Look, for 3 years now I have come seeking fruit on this fig tree, and I find none. Cut it down. Why should it use up the ground?" And he answered him, "Sir, let it alone this year also, until I dig around it and put on manure. Then if it should bear fruit next year, well and good, but if not, you can cut it down."
In ancient Israel, Passover was part of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. When God granted Israel deliverance from Egyptian slavery, the deliverance of God came suddenly. After the angel of death had killed all the firstborn of Egypt, out of fear, the Egyptians urged Israel to leave as quickly as they could. "Get out," they said, "lest all of us die." According to the command of God, all the Israelites then asked the Egyptians for gold, silver, jewelry, and clothing, which the Egyptians, being terrified, gave them everything they asked for. The Bible says Israel literally plundered the Egyptians. Israel then left so quickly, with such haste, they didn't even have enough time to properly prepare for their food, so they took dough that had not yet been leavened. And the wonderful truth is this: when God rescues his people, he does so suddenly, abruptly, they're set free. From this developed a tradition that came as a result of the command of God. When Israel would celebrate the Passover, they did so with unleavened bread. They would, in preparation for Passover, go through their homes and clothing, making sure there was not one piece of yeast in their homes. This preparation for Passover was infused with an additional meaning. The prophet Hosea would speak about idolatry as leaven, an evil, pervasive influence in Israelite culture that worked its way through everything. Amos the prophet speaks in a very similar way. He recounts Israel's sin, and then after sinning, he says, Israel would simply go through the ritual of their offerings, but, says Amos, this is as if they had offered to the Lord leavened bread, that is, unacceptable offerings. And so the idea of leaven in Passover bread became a symbol for evil. So preparing for Passover by removing leaven from your house was symbolic of preparing for Passover by removing all that was impure or unholy or displeasing to God on the Passover. On the day after Palm Sunday, Jesus was about to show Israel and the temple as a whole that they had not really done this for a long time. They were desecrating the Passover by their moral yeast. And so Monday marks the day in which Christ journeyed to the cross, shows us that his journey demands a new heart. Jesus has spent the night after Palm Sunday back in Bethany. It's now Monday, and he walks the 3 kilometers back to Jerusalem, but this time there are no crowds lining the way. Mark tells us that he was hungry. Now, had he not eaten? Well, we don't know, because we weren't there, and Mark doesn't tell us, so we don't know. But we know that he sees a fig tree in leaf from a distance, and we know he walked up to the tree looking for figs. And finding none, he curses the tree. Mark adds a curious phrase. He says, "It was not the season for figs." Well, if it isn't fig season, why is Jesus looking for figs? And why does he curse the poor fig tree when he doesn't find what wouldn't be on the tree anyway? Matthew indicates the tree withered at once, and Mark makes it sound like it only withered the next day. That's on Tuesday. But the two accounts are easily harmonized. It must have been clear from the very moment Jesus cursed the tree that it died instantly. The disciples can visibly see a miracle. But the next day, the effects of a dead tree were completely apparent. The tree had altogether dried up. At any rate, why does he curse the poor tree? Critics of Christ claim that he had a bad temper. Now, how do we understand him both cursing a tree for not having what it could not have and cursing it at all? We know that it's March or April, and it is true that figs would not begin for another 6 weeks. But, and I need to say here, I know nothing about fig trees, but I am told that a fig tree first leafs out, and when it does, there's a kind of a bud called in Hebrew a pagim, also called the early figs as opposed to the late figs. These pagim, or early figs, are a bland-tasting fruit that people sometimes ate. Technically, they're not figs at all, but they were called figs or were called early figs. Now, on any fig tree, if only leaves appeared without the pagim, then that tree would not have figs at all that year. That's probably an explanation of what we see here. That being said, yet why does Jesus curse the poor fig tree? I want to take you back to an earlier time in Jesus' ministry, a time when he was telling a parable which his disciples would probably have remembered. I'm reading from Luke chapter 13, where he says, "A man had a fig tree planted in his vineyard, and he came seeking fruit on it and found none. And he said to the vine dresser, 'Look, for 3 years now I have come seeking fruit on this fig tree, and I find none. Cut it down. Why should it use up the ground?' And he answered him, 'Sir, let it alone this year also, until I dig around it and put on manure, and if it should bear fruit next year, well and good, but if not, you can cut it down.'" According to John, this is now Jesus' third Passover in his ministry. The 3 years have passed and still no fruit. And if I have put this together correctly, Jesus sees this fig tree, which will bear no fruit this year, as a living parable worked out in front of his disciples. But, and this is the key question, what does the fig tree represent? See, some Bible teachers say it represents Israel, who have been disobedient and who are about to reject their Messiah. Now, that's a plausible explanation, but I disagree. Look at the context. Jesus has ridden into Jerusalem on Palm Sunday, and after he did that, he went into the temple, and then he went back to Bethany. The next day, Monday, according to Mark, he goes back into the temple, and as we will see, he creates sheer pandemonium in the temple. The next day, on Tuesday, he goes into the temple again, and on this day, the entire day is filled with incredible controversy between him and the Jewish religious leaders who minister, yes, in the temple. And as we will see tomorrow, his final words around the fig tree have everything to do with the future of the temple. So from my vantage point, what Jesus is doing is cursing the temple itself. He is saying to the entire corrupt system of what the temple had become, "May no one eat fruit from you again. Here you are, making sure there is no leaven in your temple, when the leaven of unrighteousness so pervades this house that I now curse it." Now, if I understand that correctly, this itself is a staggering statement, an astonishing living parable. But as of today, on Monday, Jesus' disciples don't understand, but they will. Then, leaving the fig tree that he has killed with a word, he walks from the Mount of Olives and heads straight to the temple. The temple in Jerusalem was a massive complex, as we saw yesterday, and at the heart of the temple, at its very center, was the Holy of Holies, where, as we know, the high priest was allowed to enter but only once a year, and on that occasion, it was called the Day of Atonement. The Holy of Holies symbolized the very dwelling place of God. Now, outside of the Holy of Holies was the place of sacrifice, and then in a place where all sacrifices could be observed was what was called the Court of Israel, in which only Jewish men could participate. And outside of that was the Court of Women, and all of this was enclosed behind a wall. Now, what I have described are the temple buildings, or what is called the temple complex. Surrounding this was a large open area, kind of like a large stone outdoor courtyard. Then surrounding this courtyard was a railing with a screen. Outside of the screen were a series of signs indicating that any Gentile who goes through the screen doors to approach the temple will be immediately killed, and I'm assuming that this will happen by the hands of the temple police. Now, outside of that screen was the court of Gentiles, and so you can get the picture. No Gentile would be able to even get close to the temple complex. They could see it through the screen from a distance. That place outside the screen was called, yes, the court of the Gentiles. During Passover, sheep would have been sacrificed. The Jewish historian Josephus estimated that some 250,000 sheep were sacrificed. But since no sheep may have a blemish, which includes any broken bone, no hint of disease at any time, no small or large defect, all these thousands of sheep would have been inspected by the priests. The rumor was around that the priests were sometimes crooked and in league with the money changers, and they might reject anyone's private offering or sacrifice. And so because you didn't want to drag your own animals all the way to Jerusalem only to be rejected by the crooked priests, so you went to the temple to buy already approved animals. And even though that was convenient, it was pricey. First, you had to convert your money into temple money. That's what the money changers were for. And after all, you couldn't use filthy worldly money in the temple. And you'd get ripped off doing it. It was at an incredibly poor rate of exchange. Then you could go to the next station and buy the temple animals, which were sold at greatly inflated prices. After all, the priest needed to inspect them. And so you were cheated not once, but twice. I mean, imagine the poor trying to get in on this. And Mark mentions doves on sale there. Doves were required for the purification of women and the cleansing of those who had skin diseases, and were also used by the poor who could not afford more expensive sacrifices. But that would mean that the entire court of the Gentiles would be overrun with merchants during Passover. It became a virtual stockyard attached to a grand banking scheme. So what's the problem? Well, when we come back, we're going to see that what Jesus did on Palm Sunday and what he did that day in the temple sealed his fate. It would mean that he would die at Passover. But as we have already seen, he planned that all along. When we come back, we'll see the drama of what has been called the cleansing of the temple.
There is already so much we have looked at today. For example, the meaning of the cursed fig tree representing the defiled temple sheds a lot of insight into what Jesus did when he returned to the temple after his triumphant entry on Palm Sunday. As we will see after returning, that Jesus did not come to cleanse the temple, as is often taught, but rather to speak a prophetic word against it. Thanks for listening. Back to the Bible, leading people into a dynamic relationship with God. By now, many of you have probably heard or received our Bible teaching resource called Confident Living Magazine. This is sent once in 2 months. This magazine offers even more engaging Bible teaching articles from qualified Bible teachers and writers. It has articles that are relevant to life and exclusive updates on the ministry of Back to the Bible. The magazine addresses on difficult issues of life and your journey with God. If you have not asked for your copy of Confident Living Magazine, then don't delay. So be sure to ask for your personal copy. Call us at 9492-440070. Call us at 9492-440070. Or send your request by email info@backtothebible.in.